Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 834. It's now time for the Nerdist Community Corkboard. Selfishly, I have something that I'm going to put on the Nerdist Community Corkboard.
What's that?
Well, I am performing in Boston at the Wilbur Theater on November 4th. I think tickets for the 7 or the early show might be gone, but there's a handful left for the late show, the 10 o'clock or 10:30 show. But I'm going with Mike Furman.
Where can you get tickets?
ID10T.com.
Oh.
The letter I, the letter D, the number 10, and then T.com, ID10T.com. But yeah, Mike Furman's going to be there.
Oh, awesome.
And we're gonna
are you guys going to do
we're going to do some songs. We're going to do some hard and firm songs.
Shit.
I don't know if we'll do any new. I don't know if we'll have anything new, but it's been a while since. But Mike will do stuff, and then I'll do stuff, and then we'll do stuff some get together. And so, yeah, please come out. The Wilbur is a very special place. It was the first, I think it might have been the first theater that I was ever able to perform in.
Oh,
so,
wow.
It's very special to me. It's very special to me. What else you got?
I got a bunch of things from the Nerdist family. So, first of all, the Writers Panel 300th episode is coming up, so they're doing a special celebration.
God damn it, I can't believe that.
I know, right? Sunday, November 6th at the Largo, there is going to be a huge show with literally every single creator or writer from, like, all your favorite shows, like Carlton and Damon from Lost and the creator of Parks and Rec. I mean, just literally, oh my God. Jane Espenson from Buffy. Jesus, like, this is crazy list. So it's, again, Sunday, November 6th at the Largo, and you can find tickets.
At the Largo?
Yeah, probably at Largo LA.
It's Largo LA. Yeah, I think it might be Largo-LA.com.
Yeah, you can find tickets there. Also, tomorrow at 1 p.m. Pacific, Nerdist is live streaming on Facebook. And they partnered with Ash vs. Evil Dead, and they will chainsaw anything you tell them to live. This is with Jessica Chauvin and Dan Casey. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. So that's 1 p.m. on Nerdist's Facebook page. And then also this past weekend was Strut Your Mutt, and we had a really good time. And I just want to thank everyone that joined the team, which is Aristotle Acevedo, his girlfriend Desiree, Brian and Jennifer Daggett, Stephen Fletcher, Reed Hallett, Hugh Hunter, Brian Banks. Like, there, it was a great time. It was.
I'm still
it was
focused
a lot
on
of fun.
This chainsaw. Anything? You don't want to chainsaw a chainsaw? What would you chainsaw?
Ooh, I would chainsaw
mean people. I would
pillows.
Chainsaw. I would chainsaw mean people.
I just want to chainsaw pillows. I think.
Why would you
fun.
Chainsaw pillows?
Because, like, feathers would go everywhere.
I mean, yeah, if it's a feather pillow, then yes.
Cool.
But you'd have to make sure it's a feather pillow. Otherwise,
a desk, a car.
You'd want to chainsaw a car.
Yeah.
Boy, they've really painted themselves into a corner on this one. If they're saying they'll chainsaw whatever
you
want.
What if they do say a person?
Well, I guess they have to do it. I mean, you know, like that. I don't think any court would find them guilty. They're just following the agreement that was set up.
That computer.
The fucking phone. Because why can't I get service at work? Why can't I get service
Chris,
at work?
Don't go to the office tomorrow. Stay away. They might chainsaw you.
Don't. Yeah. So that's tomorrow. And then I believe they're going to be doing a National Frankenstein Day. There's a National Frankenstein Day, and I think the At Midnight team, the digital team, is going to read all of Frankenstein.
Awesome.
On Friday, I think this Friday.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, we did it with Moby. We did a Moby Dickathon, so I guess now Frankensteinathon. This episode was Dakota Fanning, who was so wonderful.
She's so nice.
She was great. She, her, She, you know, I saw that she was making the rounds for American Pastoral, and so we inquired, and it turned out she listens to the podcast.
She knew who Scout was.
She knew who Scout was. But what a great conversation with a really engaging, intelligent human being. And some of the stuff she talks about that she's working on in the podcast, I am very excited about. There was one thing in particular that I hope they make very soon. That goes back to the Kirsten Dunst podcast. So that is I'm going to shut up and stop talking now so we can get to Dakota Fanning. Get to know Dakota Fanning. That's the hashtag I'm going to start with this because she is worth getting to know. American Pastoral, as I said, is in theaters now. Go see it. Jennifer Connelly, Ewan McGregor are also in it. This is the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 834 with Dakota Fanning. Katie Levine, please roll the business.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I really listen to this podcast.
You do?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
That's fantastic.
Yes. I was like, there's the dog that I hear about. There's Katie that I hear about.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, because when Deb said, Dakota Fanning has a new movie coming out, I was like, why would she want to come on that? And she goes, no, she really wants to come on. I'm like, really?
Yes.
Okay.
This is one of the, like, there have been two things. The first time I went on Watch What Happens Live, that was something that I was like, can I go? I was turning 21 and I was like, can I go on Watch What Happens
Live? Do they make you be 21 on the show?
I don't think they make you, but so much of the show is like they play a drinking game
and
your drink of choice next to you. So I just always didn't feel comfortable going on it until I was 21.
Right.
I thought it would be more fun when I was 21. And this was the other thing.
I'm so excited. That makes me very happy.
Yeah.
That makes me very, very, very happy. Congratulations on everything.
Thank you.
But I read something that you said recently, and it completely melted my brain, where you said,
no.
I don't remember a time where people didn't know who I was.
Right.
And objectively.
I do and I don't. Like, I certainly have. I started working when I was six.
Yes.
So, and my first movie was I Am Sam, which became, I was recognized from that film. It wasn't like, it became kind of a thing, you know? It was with Sean Penn, so obviously a lot of people saw it.
I remember the movie.
So I do remember a time where people didn't know who I was. Like, I definitely have memories pre that, but most of my life, people have recognized me.
That's so strange. It's so, I mean, you can't know any other life because that is your life, but it's gotta be, do you feel like when you're walking around, do you feel like, shit, people are watching me? Or do you feel like, yeah, you know, it's fine. I'm used to it.
I am conscious of it most of the time, but also I don't walk around like worried that people are looking at me, you know, like I think that does have something to do with because it's been a part of my life for so long. I think if I kind of gave into it and like worried about it, then I would be upset all the time.
You would be upset. No, I just years ago, right when social media was starting to become ultimately the best and worst thing that ever happened to our culture. I was on an elevator. I guess I was picking my nose because I'm a person and we have to do that sometimes. And then I got into my room in the hotel and someone tweeted me like, man, really digging around in there. And I was
like, oh, shit. God.
Like it just completely.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Everyone's.
No, I know. I mean, I'm definitely conscious of things like that. The funny thing, and some people really understand what I'm about to say and some people really don't understand. So I'm curious. I'm always curious the reaction that I'll get. I have really poor eyesight. I have astigmatism in both eyes. And that means, I mean, so I can see, but everything's kind of a little bit blurry.
Right.
It's not like nearsighted or farsighted. It's just all around kind of not great vision. And I don't wear contacts, and I have glasses, but I kind of live my life taking them on and off. Like, if I'm watching TV, I'll put them on, then I'll take them off to go in the kitchen, like, whatever. Mm-hmm. And when I'm on the street, I don't ever really wear them. And so I've developed this thing of, like, liking the slightly blurry world because it feels like if I can't quite clearly see mm-hmm. everyone else, then they can't quite clearly see me.
Do you watch Black Mirror?
No, I don't. Is that a big thing in Black Mirror?
It's a similar. There's okay. a similar okay. thing.
It, okay.
Do you like weird? Do you like Twilight Zone? Do you like any kind of weird sci-fi anthology
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, totally.
Black Mirror might be okay. a show that you would really, really okay. enjoy.
All right.
And they're about to make some more of them.
Nice. I've heard really good things.
It's just a super head-bendy, like yeah. it's like Twilight Zone, but applicable to. Where is this weird technocracy going that we're creating and living yeah. in? And what does yeah. it all mean? It's just, it's a great, it's that kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a
well,
little
that's
bit of that.
How
there's
I
that
feel,
in it. You live it.
Yeah, I live it. And but it's not, I said that to my dad once and he was like, don't tell anybody that. but I just did.
How did you find this podcast?
My manager, Brittany, who feels – it always feels so strange to just call her my manager because she's so much more than that. She's one of my best friends. I've known her. We've been working together for a really long time. She had told me about it a few years ago, and I had never really listened to podcasts, but she had told me about this one. And so I had it in the back of my mind, and then I was working in Europe about a year ago, and I looked at the podcast app on my phone, and I started listening to Serial, this one, and Lena Dunham's Women of the Hour.
Yeah.
And those were – and I just like – you had so many, obviously, because I came into it late in the game. So I had so many to listen to.
Oh, that's so cool.
And I listen to them now at the gym.
That's fantastic. It's good. It's really become a good thing to help kill – an hour of time where you
oh, yeah.
don't want to be focusing on.
Yeah, exactly. And also I think – What I really like about it is you hear of certain people, you know who they are, whatever, or you think that you know who they are, but I sometimes I'm like, I have no idea what that person like really sounds like. Do you know what I mean? Or like what their personality is really like. And it's so that's why I like listening to
it. Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm super honored and I'm yeah. super flattered. So Kyle, the walk around Muppet who used to do things to my right, started writing on Jonah's show, Hidden America.
Okay.
So it was a really good job.
Yeah.
So we certainly had to let him follow his dreams.
Let him
and
follow
shit.
His dreams.
I guess. And he's
yeah.
growing up and stuff. I mean, I guess he's going to go do that. Are you in the. So, when does American Pastoral come out?
It comes out October 21st.
Oh, okay. So, you're heavily
cities.
Into the
heavily
press cycle.
Heavily into the press. Yeah.
Right now.
Heavily, heavily into the press. The next week and a half, 2 weeks is like. I still keep a. I have a planner. So, I write my schedule down every day. It's just like I can't. On the phone, I just can't, like, see it clearly enough, and I need to be able to
right.
cross it off. And I was writing it all down the other day. I was like, oh, my God. What am I going to do?
It's just if you can just get through the week and then knock
yeah.
it out of bed for a couple of days.
I know, but even – and it seems like it's – I'm very aware of saying that it's hard is, like – kind of like it's not hard in comparison to what a lot of other people do oh. in the world. It is not hard, but like it also is, you know, it also is. So
well,
because
there's a lot of, you know, you I would love to just take a person who does not work in the entertainment business and just put them through, just go, just see what it's like for a week
yeah.
of answering the same questions, basically feeling like your brain is squeezed. Did I spoil that? Did I say that? Oh, is someone going to take that out of context?
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say this?
Well, even the stuff of like as a female of like the clothes that you're going to wear. And like if you wear something on this thing, then you have to change before this thing.
Oh,
and, you
right.
know, like, oh, you've been wearing your hair the same way for the past 2 weeks. So like you need Ugh. To try and change. Like even that stuff, you know, takes up a lot of brain, a lot of space in your brain.
Does it make you angry? Or do you just sort of go like, well, I guess that's just what happens? Or do you go, hey, could you focus on the work that I'm doing? And then the
yeah, I mean, I feel like people do focus on that too. And all the other parts of it, like I enjoy, like it's not like I'm forced into these clothes or like forced to care about it. I care about it and I enjoy that part of it too. And I've always felt like, you know, valued for other things than my looks.
Good, good, good. I mean, what are the top three? What are your repetitive questions? I'm always interested to hear, like, what are they? Mm-hmm. Every time you sit down and someone's like, I'm gonna hit her with these three, and then you have to keep your eyes from rolling back into your head.
Well, the eye roll, like, I've started to not be as good at hiding the eye roll because it's always something about age.
Sure.
Growing. You've grown up.
Sure.
You're a human big now.
You're a human being.
Yeah.
I'm in my 20s. It's fucking, it's what happens.
So that's always mentioned.
Everyone's like a weird aunt.
That's what I say. Everyone is like the great aunt that you see like every four
Look
years.
Look at you. Yes. You. Wow.
Yes.
Those are adult shoes.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's also not a conversation starter. Like, it's a conversation ender, you know? Like, because what are you... The only answer is yes. Like, I know. Like, it doesn't go anywhere. So that always gets mentioned. Probably something about, like, someone I've worked with in the past. Like, what was it like to work with blank? Which I don't mind that question. That's nice. And then how have you not gone off the rails? How are you still a normal person? Which is another, like, impossible thing to answer. And I used to really try and answer it. And now I still try to answer it, but I'm like... You know, it's impossible to have perspective on being. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just am. Like, I don't know how to describe it. I can say my parents. I can say my group of friends. I can say whatever. But ultimately, it's just like the way it's turned out.
Just for fun, the next time someone says, "How have you not gone off the rails?" Just very seriously go, a lot of drugs and I murder for pleasure. Like, just exactly. just say something. Well, really,
they're also assuming that I haven't gone off the rails. Nobody knows what has happened in private. So,
or just have a meltdown. What do you mean? You're saying about
what
the
are you talking about?
What are you talking about? How are you not on the fucking rails?
Yeah, exactly.
You have to ask the same goddamn questions all the time.
People used to ask me when I was younger, which now have being somewhat grown up, I think is really disturbing, is they always used to ask me, like, do you have any friends? Like, how is it possible to make friends? Like it basically, you know, aren't you super lonely and alone? And I would always be like, what if I was? You know what I mean? Like,
what a
terrible thing to ask, like, an 8-year-old.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, do you have any friends? How could you possibly have friends? You know what I mean? It's like,
I guess I don't.
Like,
you know, I blame it's just that most people, I think what feels like an anomaly about it is that most people who start out in the business young don't always
totally,
you know.
And I totally get that. I understand and I get where the question comes from, but I guess it's just like, I guess I'm just like, okay, maybe I've moved past that question.
Yeah, of course.
Now.
Of course. And I feel like maybe I think it'll just be a little bit longer because this movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, not to jinx anything, but I feel like there could be a nice gold statue around.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Like, when you start doing, you know, like, this will be one of those movies that I think could stop a lot
of that. I think so, too. Weirdly, I never thought about the movie that way. Like, I never thought about the movie in those terms because I actually, when we first meet my character, I'm 16. Like, I was playing younger for a lot of the film, which was, but it's so funny that people are like, this is your most grown up role yet. I'm like, okay. Sure. Like, it's always like, it's always the things that you least expect that make people realize something. You know what I mean? Like, the things that you think will be that aren't, and then the thing that you are like, oh, this might be or might not be is. I don't know.
Yeah, I think some of that has to do with just a, when you're super aware of something, you know, when you're like, oh boy, better make room for another house on the, you know, better, boy, it's going to get real crazy.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, no one gave a shit about
that thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I think there's just something about just sort of being in the moment instead of being so aware of the moment that
totally.
That really does sort of create that kind of a magic.
Yeah. This movie also was really trying to get made for so long. Like, this movie could have been made with me, Jennifer, and Ewan like 3 years ago or 4 years ago. So it's just a total, also a coincidence that it happened.
And was it at this time when you first read the script? Was that, did you immediately go, I need to do this?
Yeah,
immediately.
This was one of those that it was the role was scary, and it was like every part of my body was like, that's scary. You don't want to do like, that's scary. That's scary. And I was like, okay, that means I have to, I have to do it. It was totally an obvious, obvious choice to do it for sure. Cause it was so really unlike any character I'd ever read.
What was it? What was the specific thing about it that scared you?
Well, I have a stutter for a big part of the film. And that was something that I knew. That's just an obvious challenge right off the bat, to read a character that stutters. So that kind of scared me a little bit, made me a little nervous. And then the midsection of the movie for my character, without giving too much away, is very kind of odd. So I was like, those things kind of made me a little nervous. The stutter especially made me nervous, just because you don't want that to be something that takes people out of the film, or to sound like a phony trying to stutter.
Right.
Obviously people out there who have stutters who know what it's like, you know, right. And like, so I don't. So
that's where when you first started that first sentence, I thought you were going to say, I thought you were going to say, like, I have a stutter and I hide it well.
No.
I'm like, that is amazing.
Oh, no. In the film.
In the film.
Yeah.
Have you seen the film in its entirety?
Yes, I've seen it thrice.
Are you going to see it? What is the Shakespearean version of four times? Will you see it fourthly? Or fifth? Has the premiere happened yet? Was there a premiere?
There was a premiere here last week, and then there's a premiere in New York this week.
Do you enjoy the premiere process?
You know, I actually do enjoy the premieres because there are very few moments, I think, where... I was talking about this the other day because I went to the Venice Film Festival this year too for the second time. And there are kind of – most people think that making films is a very glamorous experience, you know, and like you're sort of an actor. And it's really not. Like, you know what I mean? It's really not a glamorous experience most of the time. It's like 16-hour days in a place that you would never go – you're by yourself, you're usually really cold or really hot. That's like a requirement of films, is like opposite seasons. And it's not glamorous a lot of the time. And so there are very few moments where you kind of feel that glamour, and like the Venice Film Festival is one of those.
Right.
Like getting out in like Italy so like loves that sort of flashing lights and the glitz and the glamour anyways. And so going there and like having a premiere there, like, whoa, it's like you feel like it's this moment, you know, it's like really nerve-wracking and exciting. And a premiere when they're kind of not just like a little screening with like two photographers, but it's like an actual thing. Like this premiere was at the Academy, and it's one of those moments you're like, oh, I was like in that cold town to experience this excitement, you know?
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I get really aware when I see, it's hard for me to watch sad movies, cause I just, I'm like an empathic sponge. So if I watch a really sad movie, I just feel sad for 2 days.
Yeah.
But when I do, sometimes it's hard for me not to go, that person probably spent 3 months crying all the time.
Yeah, totally.
What a terrible...
I know. I mean,
your brain, parts of your brain don't know the difference.
I know.
So you're just emoting all the time.
I know.
Is there any break from it?
I know. Yeah. I've had times like that. For me, I think because I started out so young, it's easy for me to mentally separate, but it's hard for your body to separate. You know what I mean? Like you finish the day and like you feel fine, but your face is like all swollen. Your eyes are like puffy and red, and like you feel good, but you know, your body is telling you something different. I've always been good at sort of separating all of that, though, and not – like, I don't stay in character. You know, I go, like, very in and out in between the literal takes.
That's the healthiest.
I just don't know – I just don't know any other way to do it. Because also part of the experience of making a movie is all the people that you meet and work with. And, like, I love getting to know them. Like, that's such a great part of filming. And I think that would be so weird if I was getting to know them as my character and not myself.
I was like, to use Daniel Day-Lewis as the example. I was like, well, I mean, people really got to hang out with Abraham Lincoln for 3 months.
And I always feel like when I say, you know, that doesn't work for me, I'm like, is there something wrong with me? Like, it works for like one of the greatest actors that's ever lived. But I've heard him talk about it. And he says, like, that's just what works.
Yeah.
For me, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think he thinks that's something everyone should do.
No, I think whatever works for you, because it ultimately you got to get the job done. Like, it's a job, you got to do it. And
exactly.
And it's a it is a creative job, but at the end of the day, it is a job. So, like, whatever you need to do to get through that day, I think is what you got to do. I don't think there's a right or wrong way. Can you and you're fine watching your stuff with other people around?
When I was younger, didn't care at all, loved it, thought it was great. And then as I've gotten older, it's become more and more like hearing your voice on an answering machine. You know what I mean? And like being appalled at what you sound like. It's that as a very kind of magnified, very magnified version of that. But with this movie, I watched it for the first two times that I watched it. It was like in a little room because Ewan wanted me to see it. And then I watched it at the Toronto Film Festival in a big room with a lot of people. And I didn't mind it as much. So I don't know. Sometimes it embarrasses me and sometimes it is okay.
You're in one of my favorite movies.
Really?
Coraline.
Really? Oh,
if you look behind you, that's like a studio's.
Oh, nice. Yeah, they sent the Box Trolls one. Trolls that my sister was in the Box Trolls.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Coraline is such it's such a gorgeous movie.
I know. Coraline was originally going to be a live action film. That's how I met Henry Selick at first. It was going to be real people. And then, I was going to do it. And then they decided to make it animation. And I worked on Coraline from 9 to 14.
Holy crap. How? It took them that long to do the stop motion?
Yeah. I worked on it from 9 to 14. And I remember Henry Selick, he like, we would finish. You know, I'd go in for a chunk of, like, 3 days, whatever, record. And we would finish the script. And then it would, like, he would pull out another one. I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And then at a certain point, it wasn't always the Michigan accent, I don't think. So at a certain point, he decided he wanted her to have the Michigan accent. So then I had to start doing that. And then it got to a point where they were like, we might have to have your sister start doing some of it because your voice has changed.
Because you're like, a person and you're getting older.
Because it's been 5 years. Like, no wonder.
They did the same thing to John Hodgman. They're like, we're going to bring in a younger John Hodgman.
Yeah, I know. It was like, so it was a really intensive experience, but something I'm really proud to be a part of. I do love the film too. And going to the studios and seeing the sets is like, really, I think describing it, I don't know if people fully understand what you're talking about. Like, it's crazy to see those sets and to really, when they're like, yeah, a great day is getting like 3 seconds, you know, it's so intense.
I assume you like doing voiceover for animation?
I do, but I like doing it when I do, but sometimes I find it hard to like release myself because I think as an actor, I've ever focused on is like being natural.
Sure.
And so voice acting sometimes calls not for necessarily being unnatural, but, you know, being kind of bigger and louder and more exaggerated. So sometimes I have more of a difficult time getting into it because of that. But like that's why Coraline was great, for example, because it was kind of more real,
yeah.
You know, it was like more realistic. And so I really, I could really get into that.
But it's those days where you go in and they're like, okay, we just need you to, we just need a bunch of like, oof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. For an hour and
totally.
A half.
Totally. And that's like ADR in films. You have that too, where they're like, okay, now laugh. And you're like, what? Like, what are you talking about? So yeah, sometimes those are, yeah, those days are hard for me. Like sounds.
Are you going to take some time off after all of this press madness?
I don't think I will make another film this year. I don't think I would have time.
Well, the year is almost over.
I know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that time off, just natural time off.
Do you like the fall? Do you like Halloween?
I do. I love Halloween, and I'm kind of stressed because I don't have a costume yet. So I have to be thinking about that. But I love Halloween. The only years I haven't dressed up is when I've been filming.
When you've been working.
Yeah.
But, and then you're kind of dressing up then. So
that's true.
To be fair.
I did a film called Night Moves during Halloween. And on Halloween, there's a scene where my character breaks out into hives. And so I had all of these like prosthetic hives on me. And so I was like, this is great. I had like Nervous Girl was my Halloween
costume. That's fantastic. Maybe during the course of this podcast, we can solve your Halloween costume
dilemma. This is something
dilemma.
I actually thought about before coming here.
You did?
I did.
So
yeah.
Just get a general. Okay, I'll tell you what I'm going to be for Halloween. Okay. This year, and then you could either steal this idea, and when I tell you what it is, you'll go, I actually could. I don't know why. I want to be 11 from Stranger Things.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's good.
So
that's really good.
We're gonna do it on At Midnight. They're like, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I think I want to be 11.
Yeah, that's
funny.
So
I'm gonna do the blonde. I'm gonna get the blonde wig.
Totally.
And the weird doll dress.
Totally. That's great. That's really good.
And just like the streak of blood coming down my face.
That's really good.
Yeah.
I like being characters from films. I was Beatrix Kiddo last year.
Nice.
I've been Margot Tenenbaum. Scarlett O'Hara 2 years in a row when I was younger in the green curtain dress that I had made. Like, I used to get like my costumes made, you know, like they used to be really serious.
We still have time. It's only,
I know.
Recording this now and it's only October 17th.
I know.
But okay, close. So what have you seen this year that you like? Like, is there something that you've seen this year that you feel like I want to pay homage to that thing?
No, this is the problem. They come to me. The costumes usually come to me in a burst. Like if I sit down to think about it, like I can never come up with it, and they usually just come to me in a burst. So I'm waiting for my burst.
You know, I feel like there's an app to create. Where you
costume
have some,
generator.
Yes,
yeah.
Where you ask, where it asks you, like, you know, you pick a different sphere. Like, do you want to be scary? Do you want to be
totally.
Funny? Do you want to be something retro?
Totally.
And then you just whittle it on
no,
down.
That's really good.
Pass in.
That's really good.
What about, I'm just looking at what's on the shelf. What about Fozzie Bear? What about Alf? Everyone loves Alf.
See, I'm not opposed to doing something that's not cute, but I do kind of like to have, like, I don't know. Like, Beatrix Studio wasn't cute, but it was kind of, like, the costume was really tight. Like, I kind of liked that.
Sure. Well, you could be... sexy elf.
Yeah, no, but I hate those like sexy bumblebee. It's like, no, that's just weird and
why
it needs to be it needs to be natural, you know what I mean? Like, it has to be part of the character. Like,
Paula Tompkins had a really great bit about the guy who was trying to tell his girlfriend that he fetishized bees and how he wanted her to dress up like, could you, like, I know this is weird, I really want to fuck a bee. Could you
sexy bee?
And she's like bzz, bzz, stop making fun of me.
Oh.
I don't know, every year it is, I have the same, and it's an unnatural amount of stress that I put on myself if I can't think of something, because I feel like it's got to be good. I feel like I need to have a good Halloween costume.
I know. I've always, like, there have been years where I'm like, okay, worst comes to worst, I'll be like a black cat, whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'll be something. Like, you'll have a costume, but I've never had to do, like, black cat in my mind is like disaster year. Do you know what I mean? Like, you really couldn't come up with anything. You had to be a black cat.
Well, you could just say like, oh, it's the cat from Coraline, the movie
oh,
I was
yeah,
in.
Oh, yeah, the movie I was in. Yeah. And then people are going to be like, you're costume from a movie you were in.
I was going to judge you when it wasn't that, yeah, but now I'm going to judge you
I really
because
judge
of this.
You.
So yeah, here you exactly. go. I think if you just give it an actual identity, mm-hmm. then it doesn't matter. Oh, this is the cat. And then you just treat people like they're dumb. This is the cat from Bell, Book, and Candle, one yeah. of the classic movies in cinema.
Duh.
Are you fucking stupid?
Duh.
And then just confuse them and they walk away. Do you like, are you a go out person? Do you like to go out and be social?
I do, yeah. I do. I'm a walking contradiction in a lot of aspects of my life. So I love being alone. Like, I love it. I'm not a person who's afraid to be alone. Like, I love it and really need my alone time. But I also, like, once the alone time tank has been filled, then it's like need to be around like a lot of people,
right?
And so yeah, I do love going out. I have a great group of friends that I love being with. Yeah,
have you essentially had the same group of friends for years and years and years?
Pretty much.
Nice.
Yeah, I went to high school. I was homeschooled until high school, and I went to high school here in LA, and like my girlfriends and guy friends that I met in high school are still my best friends. And then there have been people that have, you know, become also a part of the group that I didn't go to high school with, like through other people or college or whatever. But yeah, the core group is the same. It's really nice.
And especially when you're working on film too, you sort of, Do you like pick up a person on each film? Because, you know, I know a lot of times you intend, it's like you work with people and go, oh, I really want to hang out. But yeah. then everyone goes off and does their own thing, and then you don't.
Yeah.
And 5 years go by and you don't see them again.
Yeah. A lot of the people that I've worked with, and I think, again, because I was so young and they knew me as a child, like they did kind of make an effort to stay yeah. in touch and like be a part of my life. So a lot of people that I've worked with over the years, I am, you know, still friends with. But that's the other weird thing that you go to like these movies and you create this group of people that you work really hard to get comfortable with, and then you just leave. And, you know, sometimes you never see a person again that you talk to every day for 12 hours, you know,
on a really deep level.
So it's really a strange thing. And I'm not somebody who loves change in general. Like, I like, you know, if you're in, and I like it to be like that. And it's kind of a weird job for somebody who doesn't like change. But
yeah, it is. It's a strangely, there is a strangely transient kind of a
yeah.
Yeah, set up camp here. This is my life. Mm-hmm. And then it just goes as far as it can go. And then you pick up, and people really, I guess it's accepted just because, like, well, it's just part of the job and everyone's got to do
right.
it. And you couldn't, you know, if you work on enough stuff, it's not like, you could have 300, you know, after a couple of movies, you'd have 300 people
know,
to be
yeah,
responsible
exactly.
to check in on
no,
all the
exactly.
time. You'd never get anything done.
I try to make an effort really, though, to stay in touch. And even if it's not like seeing people all the time, just like a text or an email or something. I really try and do that.
What's a good, when you get on a set and you're working, are there certain indicators that you know, like, okay, this is going to be a good experience, or like, oh, this might be kind of weird?
I always spend like the first week or so of a film, especially the pre-production time, like the week that you have to go before you start working. I spend that time wishing it was the last set that I was on, and like looking at a person who I loved, the person that did their job before, and being like, you're not Tom. Do you know what I mean? Like, what, you're an imposter. Like, you're not my friend, you know? And then I always have to remind myself, like, you're going to grow to feel the exact same way mm-hmm. about this set and these people.
That's like, the not liking change thing.
And I just have to be like, you will. And you're going to look back on how you feel right now at the end and be mad at yourself that you've wasted this week that you could have been spending more time with these people that you're going to grow to love. So I try and like stay open and positive, but I always like, I hate pre-production time. I don't know why. Cause I like working, and I like when the set starts to function and like really you feel comfortable and safe with everyone. And that's a very like unsafe time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not sure how it's going to be. You're not sure what the vibe is going to be. You don't know any of these people. And so it feels very unsafe. And I'm always like, what am I doing here? Why is this my job? Like, I gotta go home. I gotta get out of here. Like, yeah. I get really homesick. And I never get homesick, but I always get homesick during that pre-production time. I just need the movie to start, and I need to start, like, vibing with everybody.
Yeah, it's like, I guess it almost feels like it should be part of an acting class where it's like, yeah, and then this is just, you're just gonna go to an office and talk to people about the thing you're gonna do, but you're not actually gonna do it yet.
And everyone's a really weird version of themselves. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just...
Everyone's trying to fit in.
I'm like, can we just skip this? Please. I don't need this. Like, you're actually making me not want to be here.
That makes so much sense, though, that if you spent, you know, a significant part of your young life working a lot and moving around a lot, of course you would just sort of want to just stay in one place, mm-hmm. and not have to. Mm-hmm. Do you ever think, someday I don't want to do this anymore. I just want to live on a farm and and raise my own cows.
No, I really don't. I really don't. I'd love to have a farm one day, but I'd still like to make movies. I have to make movies to get a farm.
Yeah, you have to make movies. Yeah, that's the thing. You have to do the thing. You have to. Yes, that's exactly right. To get that thing.
Yeah.
I need to do a lot of this thing so then I can go isolate myself. And then occasionally I have to step back out, yeah. and go isolate
no,
myself.
No, but
again.
I really do love, love, love what I do. I really do. I love being on a set. I love that camaraderie. It is the only place. Like, I am a very pretty type A person. I like to be organized. I get stressed out about, like, little things, like packing a suitcase is like a nightmare. Like, I get these weird little anxieties, and, like, being on a set, I never ring my phone on set. I leave it in my trailer, so I look at it whenever I'm in there, but, like, I never bring it on the actual set. And it's like everyone who's important to me knows where I am and knows how to get in touch with me, so I don't even, like, think about, like, anyone keeping in contact with anybody. And it's just, my brain is totally able to shut off from anything else, and I have never been able to replace that that feeling. And I just love what I do. I really do. So I can't imagine not wanting to do it, but I can imagine wanting to do other things too. Like, I'm producing a film for the first time, and I want to direct something one day. Like, I definitely want to do more than just be an actor.
What are you producing?
The Bell Jar. When Kirsten Dunst was here,
yes!
remember when
yes!
she couldn't tell you
yes!
what it was?
Yes,
that's what it was.
She told
and now
me off
we can
mic.
Say it. Yeah,
she told me off mic, but she was like, "I can't say."
I was listening to it and I was like, "Don't say
don't
it!
Don't you say
I
it!"
I was like, "Don't say it, Kirsten! I know you want to so bad."
She was very good about it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's sort of, you know what's interesting about that exact thing is I'm not a journalist. Like, I don't want anyone to ever feel like, ah, you got me.
Right,
you know,
yeah,
like,
totally.
But there is something sort of exciting about, like, oh, is she going to say something no one's ever heard before?
Yeah.
So I do try to straddle the line
of
like,
course.
If you want to say it,
yeah,
say it, but
course.
Please, whatever you're comfortable
yeah,
with.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
That's fantastic,
yes,
though.
Yes.
Are you, how deep in production are you?
Well, we're deep in terms of, like, it's been announced. Kirsten wrote the script. She's directing it. I'm in it. You know, now are just, like, putting it together in terms of, like, the money and the financing and the casting and all that. But it's like, you know, we're doing that. We're in that process. So
do you enjoy that now you're on the
yeah,
other side
I know,
of pre-production?
I know. I think being involved in the casting in a more meaningful way than you are as an actor has been exciting. Just, like, kind of having a moment of, like, Kirsten and I are also friends. Like, we hang out in real life too, but just, like, sitting around and being like, oh my god, what about that person for this, you know, like, that's been really fun. The other stuff, like the financing and all of that and some of the bullshit is like, can be really frustrating, especially with this project, because, you know, you come across people who are like, why is this an interesting film that people want to see? You're like, what are you talking about? Do you know what I mean? Like, what? I don't even know how to answer that question. Like, it's The Bell Jar, you know? Like,
so it's about, it's about a jar?
Yeah, right.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's
pick
like,
up a book.
Isn't it depressing? It's like, actually, no. It's really not depressing. There are so many ways to read it and so many ways to interpret it. And
but what if it was?
But that's the other thing. What if it was? That's a part of life, you know? And, like, so I'm that part is can be frustrating, but it's totally necessary and important. It's just about finding the people that kind of are on your same page, you know,
yeah,
and get it, get what you're trying to do, which is totally possible.
And what is it specifically that you want? Like, what is it specifically exciting about Bell Jar that you feel like I really need to make this a thing?
Well, I think just the fact that, like, it's such an important book to so many people. And I think a lot of the time it gets written off as, like, dark and depressing, and, like, people know Sylvia Plath's real life story and, sure, like, the things that she went through in her life, that people forget that The Bell Jar is not an autobiography, that it's,
right,
a fictional novel, and that there is actually, like, a lot of irony in the book and, like, a lot of humor, and, like, yes, it's, there are dark parts about it, but it actually ends in a really hopeful way, and I think that that gets forgotten about. So I think that we're excited about that, and just telling just also kind of making it a movie, you know, like making it cinematic, like those passages that you read and sort of like bringing them to life and like making them beautiful, you know.
I think weirdly that's how you know you're on the right track, when studio people are like, well, what is it? Because if they don't get it, that means that you're going to bring something unique to it. Like, if,
yeah,
it was something that was really obvious, or like,
yeah, that's,
oh,
true,
I get it, it's The Rock and a chimp.
That's, you know, true, yeah, right.
Wait,
that may be true.
Write that down. All right, Chimp Rock.
That's good. No, that's true. That is true.
That means that you see something specific in there that is, and they don't see that, I think, is good, because then you make it and they're like, oh, well, now we need to make 10 of those.
No, you know? Yeah, totally. No, that is true. I mean, yeah, yes, I agree. It is ultimately will be a good thing, I suppose.
I mean, it's pretty exciting when you think about it. I mean, like, so this movie's coming out. I think this movie's going to be amazing, and it will do amazing things for you. And then, but there's so many things you can do.
I know.
It's like the whole world.
I know.
Not to overwhelm you. But.
No, it's true, though. I'm kind of at that point in my life. I think because I realize at a certain point that being an actor, as much as I love it, it's not enough for me. It's not enough for me because you're constantly at the mercy of other people to choose you, you know, to believe in you,
right,
to say, oh, I think you can do something. And it could be something that you know you can do. Do you know what I mean? You're like, you don't know me. You have no idea anything about me. And, like,
right,
you're telling me what I can do. You know, it's like,
right,
what are you talking about? And when it works and you do connect with somebody who believes in you, it's wonderful. But then there are so many times where, like, somebody's like, I don't think she can do that. And you're like, what are you talking about? You know, like, what? Because we had like a weird coffee for 20 minutes.
Right, right,
like,
right, right, right.
You don't know anything about me. So
how many weird 20-minute coffees have you had to sit through?
Countless weird coffees.
What is the point of them? You're supposed to just try to.
I can tell right away if somebody's going to get me or not. And like, it's a good thing and also a bad thing, because it's just, you just know when you're connecting with a person, and you know when somebody just like doesn't get you. And that, because I'm really kind of tuned in with that, it actually makes disappointment easier to deal with, because I'm like, that person just didn't get me. You know,
right,
what I mean? Like, it wasn't going to be right because we just were never going to be on the same page. So
right,
it's made things like easier for to bigger pills, easier to swallow, bitter pills, easier to swallow. But I think that that has led me to realize that I want to develop my own material, you know, and like, and, you know, produce things and direct things and all of that.
What type of a thing do you think you want to direct? Do you want it to be like an intimate thing or like a big thing?
Intimate, I think. I don't know exactly what, obviously, but, and I'd like to make like a short film before, you know, I don't want to just jump in thinking that I can make a feature film. I'd like to maybe even do a couple short films before I do that. But I'm really excited about directing. And I always have been. But I wanted to, some of the best directors I've worked with have been great because they're really knowledgeable about every aspect of making a film, like every department, like they get it, you know, you have to know what the sound person is trying to achieve. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you have to be like tuned in to everybody. So I've always wanted to like learn more before I directed something. So I still feel like I have a little bit to learn. But
listen, if you want to direct Chimp Rock.
Chimp Rock.
I haven't attached anyone yet. So, I mean, listen, if you want to get on the ground floor of a truly breathtaking opportunity. I always kind of feel like, what if you could... That almost seemed like a challenge. Like, if you're a director, like, what, could I make Chimp Rock artistic? Like, could I somehow make The Rock and a Chimp an art house movie? Is that possible? Or is it impossible to do that? Does it just have to be The Rock and a Chimp or Cops?
You know what? I just talked about not telling people what they are capable of. So, you know what?
I don't think I'm capable of it. It's not my thing.
I'm not
going to
put The Rock in a box like that.
Good idea. Don't put The Rock and a Chimp in a box together. That's a very bad idea.
You never know.
But that's what's exciting is that there's so much more. I mean, you really, even though you've been working for a long time, you're really kind of just getting started.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah. When I turned 18, I was like, okay, I'd never want to discredit like the things that I've done. I'm, you know, proud of the things I've been a part of and the opportunities I've had, and I would never disregard them. But I was kind of like, you kind of get to start over a little bit, you know? And that's, that was exciting, and I still feel sort of in that. The other question I should have said earlier when you asked about the questions I get asked all the time is like, you know, how do you feel about transitioning from a child actor to an adult actor, you know? Like, I feel fine about it. Like, what do you mean? Until you said something, I felt great. But
do you think you want to keep playing roles of children?
No, I don't. But people still ask me about transitioning. I'm like, I think the transition's done.
I think it's happened.
I think it's over. But people still ask me about that sometimes.
You're a fully grown adult.
Yeah.
It's not like you sprout extra limbs at 25. No. You're like, well, in a couple of years, you're going to.
Well, I just wonder, I'm waiting for what will be the thing that I do where people are like, whoa, she's grown now. Like, what will it be? Like, if it's not this, if it's not being 22 years old and, like, clearly a fully developed young woman, but a woman, like, what will it be? Is it, like, getting married? Is it, like, having a baby? Like, what is the thing that...
For some people... Yes, of course I do. The only analogous experience I can give to you is that... the year you were born, I was doing a show for MTV, which makes me feel like 100. But it's a show that people still ask about. And I think no matter what – and I've done a million things since then.
Sure.
But I think when people are scrambling for something, they just kind of make
the
laziest choice.
Yeah.
And rather than do a deep dive and go, hey, I'm going to do some research and find out what Dakota Fanning actually gives a shit about or what she does or where she's from. They're just going to – it's just the lowest hanging fruit because they got deadlines and they got to come out, you know, because there's 100
– And I'm guilty of that too. Like I give answers like that sometimes too. Do you know what I mean? Like I give like an easy answer every once in a while. So I totally get like going for an easy question.
But for some people, they're just always going to ask that. And they're always going to ask it. They're always going to ask you like they're the first person to ask
you. I know. Well, I did realize, though, that I did have a moment where I was like getting frustrated about this, not like losing my mind, but just like thinking about it. And I was like, it's kind of my fault a little bit because sometimes, like a lot of times people interview me and they're like, I've read your past interviews and like, you're such a, like, I feel like I don't know anything about you after I finish reading it. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of like that. Like, I kind of like being a little mysterious and I am sort of private. But then I was like, okay, but you can't really get frustrated if you're like, nobody knows who I am. Or like, everybody has these preconceived notions that are wrong. It's like, okay, well, you can't get really upset about it if you've never told anyone who you are. And so... For so long, I said that I wasn't going to have any social media. Like, I wasn't into that, and I didn't want to do that. And then I do now have one form. I have a public Instagram, partly for that reason, because I was like, okay, this is kind of a way of being who you are and, like, people being able to see that and like see what you find funny or interesting or like what I'm about. So part of it is kind of my fault because I don't think I totally opened up. But I think that was always because I felt on guard of like, do you have any friends? Like, yes, I do. You know what I mean? Like, are you worried about going off the rails? No, I'm not. You know, like I always got those questions too, where it was like, I think you just want me to fail really badly. Like, that's what it feels like. And so I was a little on guard because of that. But now.
Well, and also the internet's really creepy if you're a woman, especially a young woman. People are just super creepy when they don't have to bear any responsibility for what they say. So totally. I think Instagram is a safe one because you're just posting pictures. You're not really saying you don't have to
go too deep if you don't want to.
No, and I think you can turn off comments if you want to.
So right. Well, I only get notifications of the people that I follow.
That you follow,
you know,
right.
I don't get that. Even though Instagram is really doing this weird thing of like, so-and-so liked a post that you're tagged in. So I can see like people that I know who are like liking a picture of me at like 3 a.m. You know what I mean? I'm like, what are you doing? Like, why are you awake and why are you liking these pictures? I'm confused.
This is a little tip out there. Dakota's watching you. Don't like stuff at weird hours.
It's just like pops up. I'm sure I could turn that off, but I kind of like it.
I have all those notifications off. It's just, it would drive me crazy the whole time. I mean, I'm already trying to make a slight separation from, I mean, not, you know, obviously everything I do revolves around social media.
Sure.
But I am trying to just have a little bit of a separation
so
I can have a life that is in the present, in the real world, which seems an appropriate thing to do.
Absolutely, yeah.
What types of stuff do you like to, I looked to see if you had a Twitter page and you didn't. Mm-hmm. And so I think I just assumed like, oh, she's not on social media at all. Do you want to say what your Instagram account is?
Just my name.
Oh, it's just Dakota Fanning.
Yeah, Dakota Fanning. I got that back from somebody who had it. just my name. I just post like, I don't know. I post like things. It's one of my best friend's birthday today, which, you know, I post like a picture of me and him that was funny. And like, then I post like at the premiere the other night and tag all the people that you're wearing. Like, you know, I just kind of do what I feel. I don't know.
The reason I ask is because Instagram is also an interesting place to start experimenting with directing. If you wanted to.
Interesting.
You could just, you know, just make like weird little 1-minute movies.
Oh, that's true.
Just to fuck around, because then it's totally disposable. And it's like, you don't have to. And what's great about that is that, you know, if it's something that you do it and afterwards you go, I don't like this, you just delete it. Or you go like, oh, well, you know, I didn't really waste a lot of energy on
that. Totally. I never even thought about that. Yeah, that's true.
And then, you know, because I think that kind of stuff starts changing the, if you want to change the conversation, some of the conversation, that kind of thing can start changing the conversation. Because people go, oh, wow, she's directing these cool, weird things on Instagram.
Totally.
Yeah,
totally.
And then it just kind of mixes it up. If you're bored, are you good? You said you're good with alone time, but are you good doing nothing? Or do you have to be doing something with your alone time?
No, I'm good at, I can be good at doing nothing if I feel like everything is in order. If it's not, if everything is not in order, like if the dishwasher is full, I need to, but I have an obsession with efficiency. Like I like try and do everything in the most efficient way. Like on my walk home, like I'll think about like, I'm going to go in, I'm going to take my shoes off and put my keys down, and I have like my salad here, and then I'm going to go ahead and put my salad by the TV and like turn it on and then go and like wash my hands. And by the time I come back, it will be on. Like, you know, I have these weird things. So I do all of that and I'm obsessed with it. So it's like, if my errands and what I feel like needs to be completed is done, then I can totally do nothing. But if not, then I have to work those errands into like my TV watching schedule.
If the dishwasher is full and you're sitting in your house, can you literally not focus on anything else until you have to take the dishwasher?
I will choose to not fast forward during the commercial break and use that time to unload the dishwasher.
That is a very efficient use of your commercial time. That I actually completely understand that, like, to the extent where if I'm driving somewhere, I will say like, oh, I need to, you know, in 4 miles, I need to go this way because I know that that thing is on that side of the street. Mm-hmm. And then the parking lot is behind that. So I need to make sure.
I do that too. Not with driving, but I live in New York, so I walk. But I do that too. I'm like, in 5 blocks, I'll need to be on the right. So there's a walk signal now. So I should go ahead
and cross. That's exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I totally do that.
It just makes sense.
I know. I don't understand
people who don't
Me
do
either.
That.
Me
You're just going to figure it out when you get there? What's wrong with you?
No, I know. Me either. Yeah, I don't know why you wouldn't do that.
Well, New York is a really good city for that because it's such a... You know, L.A. is real bad for it. Uh-huh. L.A. is just like, put a street there. Put a building there. Mm-hmm. Who gives a shit? Well, put a freeway there. You know, New York is such a grid. Like, it just makes so much sense.
So much sense. I love it.
That is one thing I really do loathe about L.A. and adore about New York is just like the simplicity of the design. It just makes so much sense.
Yes, I agree. I agree. I love it for many reasons, but that's a big one.
What is your favorite part of New York?
I'm a downtown person. Like, I love East Village. I love Lower East Side. I love Soho. I live downtown, so anywhere downtown, really.
Do you ever envision yourself living anywhere else? Besides the farm.
Besides my farm. I know that, like, I will raise my kids in L.A. This is where my family lives. This mm-hmm. is where my mom is, where my dad is. Like, I've never pictured my life once I'm in the family zone of, like, living away from them. But I also can't imagine not having a place to call home in New York. Like, sure. I definitely want to live in both places.
Yeah.
And be, like, not having a place in New York, like, devastates me at this point in my life. Like, it would make me feel like I don't belong. Like, you know, I really love having that place. I think it's because it's the first place I lived alone, and it's where I feel like I created my independent life, and so I'm really connected to it.
Maybe your Halloween costume this year is you could go as like Soho, or you could go
What does that look like?
I don't know. You're
a tourist?
Yes, you're a tourist and you have a fanny pack. Yeah. And then you have a thing on your head that holds up street signs that says like Spring Street.
Yes.
You know, so you're always in yes. your little book and you're always just looking for, you're just
That's
lost.
Funny.
And you're trying to figure out where you're going.
Tourist is good.
So it was great. I lived there when I lived the brief period of time where I lived in New York.
Yeah.
And have you ever been to... I don't know if you like this kind of weird stuff. There's an amazing store in downtown called the Evolution Store.
Oh, yeah. It moved.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they moved to Broadway.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I've definitely been in Evolution. I once went in there and went to my mom and I. We saw like a human fetus skeleton.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you could only purchase it if you were a doctor. Like that was like there was a requirement to buy this.
How hard would it be to get a doctor? You're just like,
yeah, I'm a doctor.
I'm as a physician, I yeah. resent the implication that I am not a doctor. I've been circling some stuff. They had a, I was just there like 2 weeks ago, and they had a two-headed calf and the two-headed and the skeleton separately from the same animal.
Wow.
But they were sold as a package,
right?
But I don't know if I can justify spending $35,000 on
That's
a two-headed
the thing.
Calf.
So expensive. Yeah. All that stuff is really expensive. I like the penis bones.
The penis
bones,
the raccoon penis bones,
yeah.
Where it was the raccoon was serving its compatriots. Oh, can you dominate an animal any more than making it serve its? It's relatives' dicks to you. There's nothing. No
it's story. So bad. I know. It cracks me up every time. I have one piece of taxidermy that was given to me by David Letterman on his show.
What?
And it's a squirrel.
Oh, that's amazing.
And so I have a squirrel.
What were the circumstances surrounding the squirrel taxidermy?
The circumstances were for years and years and years, like I talked about how desperately I wanted a dog. I wanted a dog so bad. And I talked about it on multiple talk shows, like I wanted a dog so bad, which I found out later that Jay Leno asked my parents, like the producers asked my parents if he could give me a dog, and they said no. Oh. And I was devastated later on in life when I found that out. But side note. Anyways, David Letterman, I talked about wanting a dog on the show. So he gave me a squirrel, a taxidermied squirrel.
That's amazing.
As he would.
Did you ever get a dog?
Yeah, we got it. I did get a dog.
You did get a dog.
But I was 12. I had to wait till I was 12 to get a dog. And my parents didn't even get me the dog. It was given to me. And they were forced to take it because I accepted it in front of, like, in the lunch tent on a film that I was. And my mom was on the phone with my dad. And my dad was like, no, like, no, we're not keeping the dog. Like, we're not keeping the dog. And my mom was like, Steve, literally 150 people just watched her take this dog from like another child. Like there's not a choice. Like we have to keep the dog.
That's pretty sneaky on your part.
Yeah, I was
that's pretty cool.
Oh, who, me? Dog? Oh, mom. Oh, I had no idea.
You always taught me to be a good person.
Yeah.
And I took this dog.
I couldn't make her feel bad.
Do you still have this dog?
Yes.
Oh.
Her name is Llewellyn, and she's a schnoodle, and she's the best thing that's ever happened to us, and the best thing that's ever happened to my dad, by the way. My dad and her are absolutely inseparable. He loves her so much.
Yes, Steve.
I know, Steve.
Nice try. You almost killed one of the greatest experiences of your life.
Seriously, I know. We remind him of it very often. She is, everyone thinks they have the best dog. I get it. She is the best dog. She really is.
Why is she, what's so great about her?
She just is like such, she's so smart, like so smart, knows so many like words, like literally feels like she is communicating with you in like, in the English language, and just like has never done anything annoying, has never like gotten aggressive, like she just aims to please. Totally.
And is she with your family?
Yeah, she stays in LA. Yeah. She's too attached to my dad, honestly. Like, when my dad is away, which is not often, but when he is, like, she's depressed. She is really depressed.
That's so sweet.
I know. It's so cute.
Are you going to get another? Do you think you're going to get another dog? It's just, I feel like it's probably hard, right? When you.
I think it's too hard for me right now. I also, like, I've thought that I wanted another dog, and I was like, while Llewellyn is alive, like I feel like I'd be cheating on her with if I got another animal, like,
because
I don't see her every day, you know. So I was like, oh my god, if I spend 8 months out of the year with another dog, and like I only see her at Christmas time, like,
and you
that's
go
horrible.
Home and then she
like,
smells another
yeah,
dog
exactly.
on you.
I can't do it to her. I can't do it.
She's
her.
She's like, let me smell your pants. What the fuck is that?
What the fuck is that?
Who is this?
I know.
What is this hair?
I know.
Whose hair is this?
She also doesn't like dogs. That is
really?
The one thing about her. She's not aggressive towards them, but she's just completely uninterested.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't even be like she would get along with the dog when I brought it home. I think it's too hard right now, like with traveling. And I would also weirdly want a bigger dog to not be the actress with the dog,
right?
The little dog. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would want like a something that people like consider a dog. Like,
I think you
an Australian Shepherd.
Get
you know,
an Australian
like,
Shepherd, but still carry it around in a bag, yeah, just like a weirdly where you got a drag or like a Bjorn where you carry around an awkwardly large dog.
When we were, because we did get her when we were still young. My sister was 8 and I was 12 when we got Llewellyn. We had and someone gave us a dog stroller, and we would take her out in the dog stroller for
My
sure.
My mom loves that move. I try to talk her out of it.
It's bad.
Yeah.
I see people now, like, but we were children. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's more acceptable.
Grown up.
I see grown ups with them now, and I'm like, that is really kind of strange.
I hope I don't get to a point in my life where I go, oh, I get it. Like, I don't want to get it.
I know.
I don't want to get the dog in the stroller.
I don't want to get it either. It was fine when I was a kid. Now it's weird.
So when does American Pastoral come out?
October 21st in select cities.
In select cities.
And then it will be wide later.
And then it's going to go wide.
Yeah.
And now that when you finish all the press that you're doing for there, do you kind of just like file it away for efficiency's sake? Do you sort of file it away and then it's like you won't think about it again until it might come back around?
Probably. Yeah, probably. That's kind of how I am in general. I have like my brain files, you know?
Yeah.
Just, things get filed into it.
Sherlock calls it his mind palace.
There you go.
That's your mind palace. Yeah. is all hidden away.
My best friend Audrey loves when I say brain files, so I said it for her.
Maybe your first short film on Instagram should be called Brain Files.
Brain Files. Oh,
and
God.
Just whatever that means to you.
It'll scare people.
But you need to... I feel like if you do a lot of stuff, you do have to find a way to, otherwise it's just everything's so messy. Otherwise everything's just gets like, how do you focus on anything?
No, you have to compartmentalize for sure. You have to compartmentalize without being cold. You know what I mean? Like you have to be able to, I don't know. Yeah. I think I'm able to switch in. I'm able to, you know, switch it in and out. I don't know. I've had to get good at that.
Are you good at, you know, earlier when you said, oh, when I have to pack, I get really anxious.
Oof.
Do you even mentioning it?
God.
Don't, because it feels like your brain would not allow you to just like mash a bunch of stuff into a bag and then close
it. Also, you're making choices based on like what you in 3 weeks is going to want.
Right.
How do I know that? You know, like I get really stressed out about it. And I'm somebody like I can handle a lot. Like I'm really tough. I'm really strong. Like mentally I can handle a ton. But then if it just fills up just a little too much, it's like I'm on the phone with my mom, like hysterically crying, like because if I bring this shampoo, then that means I don't have to take that one. And this one's half full. Do you think it's going to last? Oh my God. What if it runs out? You know, like it's like if you just push me a little too hard, I just like fall apart and have to, then I can reel it back in. I just need to get it out.
But I think that's good. I think it's good that the pressure valve are like dumb things and not like the big things.
Thank God. I know. Thank God. I think that's just, I've had to get used to big. In this business, you have to get used to big, shitty things happening. Do you know what I mean? And like accept that is going to be a part of – that's going to be a part of your life. So you have to get good at dealing with that to not fall apart every time it does. So it does – it's like that does translate into like, you know, having dry cleaning to go pick up. Oh, my God. You know, like that kind of thing.
If I run out of shampoo, there's no more stores. How would I ever get another bottle of shampoo?
Oh, my God. They're not going to sell it. They don't make it anymore. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's like it – I totally can spiral. But at least it's about the little stuff.
Are there things in the business that you feel like you wish were different that you feel like you might be able to change? Are they things about the way actors relate to studios or are there gender things that you think, well, we're still not in a great place and I want to be able to – I mean, are there things that you want to do? Because I feel like you're in a position where you could – you really could make some kind of impact in a big way if you wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are – I don't want to take – like I don't want that to be my life mission, you know, like to – because I think it would – you would, again, just be disappointed a lot. But it's definitely something that I think about. Like there – the other day there was this like TV project that I was a part of sort of developing. And one of the networks emailed back and was like, we love this or like we love that about it, but we're just really not interested in doing like anything that centers around a female right now.
Oh, who would say that?
You know, and you're like, whoa, like that's something that you're comfortable saying like
to another person, like, that's putting
so
in an email.
Weird, like that's so crazy. So like that still happens, you know, and you're like, what are you talking about? And then back to the like again with the bell jar, it's like trying to convince people why a movie that obviously appeals to like 50% of the population and the other 50% like I'm sure can enjoy it as well, sure. You know, and trying to explain why that's important or why it's interesting, you know, like you still have to have those conversations. So and I don't can I totally change it? Probably not. But I definitely like to keep it in mind and like talk about it when I can.
Well, that's why it's important for you to make the bell jar. Like, it's important for you to.
I know that's
to
what,
do,
yeah.
do that kind of thing because you know those people who send emails like that, they don't know what the fuck they're like. People like that are so terrified. I'm going to get fired at any moment. I'm just going to say whatever I need to
say. I guess.
You know, and it's a bummer, but it also they don't matter.
No,
you know,
I know.
Like
yeah.
they don't matter.
Totally,
and you still can absolutely do this kind of thing. And I was so excited when she told me what it was.
Yeah.
Off camera. Off camera. These are
off
cameras,
mic.
Right?
Yeah.
These are sound cameras. They record. How long have I been doing this? I don't know. Sometimes words are hard.
They are. Sometimes words are hard.
You know
hard.
What happens to Coda? Because they all rush to your mouth at the same time.
They do.
And which one's going to get through? And in that moment, camera got through. There was no camera.
I get it.
I apologize.
Trust me, I totally get it.
I'm so flattered that you know what this podcast is and that you wanted to do it at all.
Yes.
I really appreciate
that.
Oh
my gosh, thank you so much.
Oh, you've been so delightful to talk to. Oh. And I honestly, you're welcome to come back whenever you want. Even if, you know, you don't have to promote anything.
Yeah.
You can just come back and talk
then
about
I'll get
shit.
Dakota Fanning Returns.
Dakota Fanning Returns, yes. And then if you're a third time, it's Dakota Fanning Returns again.
Again.
Yes.
Oh my God.
And then a fourth time might be yet again.
Have you had a fourth time?
Yeah, we've had a few fourth times.
I think
Patrick Stewart might have been a four.
Mm.
Neil deGrasse Tyson was
a
four.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
Now that we've been doing this for almost 7 years,
yeah,
we're starting to get some. Have you ever thought about? I know. I'm sure you have to go do other things. Have you ever thought about doing a podcasty type of a thing?
I've never thought about it. No, I've never thought about it.
What if we just ended the podcast right there? No, I never really thought about it.
but I think because I just was missing out on podcasts for a long time. It's only been in the last year, like I said, that I've started listening to some. And so, no, I never have. But I have a lot of really entertaining friends, so it would be really good.
I mean, it could. Even if you don't ever release them, you know, it's just interesting.
It's kind of fun, yeah.
It is fun because it sort of puts you in the position of being inquisitive,
mm-hmm,
and trying to find out about things,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm,
which when you kind of get into the autopilot of your daily life, it's kind of nice. It's kind of nice sometimes. It forces you to sit down and be present, which is a fun
Instagram
thing to do.
Instagram, movies, and podcasts. There's been a lot of...
The two big ideas.
There's been a lot of great ideas happening.
Oh, and change entertainment business.
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to change entertainment business and change the conversation surrounding Dakota Fanning for...
Get Chimp Rock made.
Chimp Rock! Come on! What, I feel like since you know the show, would you say enjoy your burrito at the end?
Oh my
for
god,
people?
Yes, I would love it.
Please.
Enjoy your burrito.
Thank you.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.